Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. Idea Talks is a monthly conversation with Josh Tice and other church leaders on big ideas for life and ministry. On today's episode, our special guest is Pastor Jeremy Rands, who is the lead pastor of Monclova Road Baptist Church in Monclova, Ohio. Pastor Rands and Pastor Tice will be discussing the big idea of organized leadership.
Hi, Josh Tice here with another Idea Talks. Today's big idea that we're going to be discussing is organizational leadership. And we're going to be talking about organized leadership in the realm of ministry. That's the big idea. We find ourselves here on the set of Idea Day Midwest. And if you've never been to one of our events, we want to encourage you to come to Idea Day South or Idea Day West or one of the future Idea Days that we have. Today, our special guest is Pastor Jeremy Rands. Now, Jeremy is a personal friend of mine. I know more about him. I know he's really gifted in this area of organized leadership and organizational leadership. And so I really want to talk with him about that and discuss these philosophies. Though I may know Jeremy, you may not be as familiar. So Jeremy, why don't you speak to who you are, where you're from, the ministries you've been involved with in the past and in the present, and your passion for organized leadership.
Okay. I grew up in the ministry. My dad was a church planter. So I spent the first 18 years of my life, every 2 years or so, we'd travel for a place that didn't have a church and start a church, get it going. So my initial experience in ministry was starting from nothing.
Okay.
And my dad would go in, find a building, we'd remodel, we'd get it growing. And usually in about 2 years, he'd have up to about 100 people. He'd bring a pastor in, he'd go on to the next church.
So vocationally, your dad was a church planter, not like a church planter. He planted a church like me in the States forever.
Right.
He literally went from church plant to church plant to church plant. That's incredible.
Yeah, New Hampshire, Michigan, Wyoming, back to Michigan,
oh my
Pennsylvania.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we've moved probably 23 times before I was 18.
Are you kidding me? So we probably have some in our audience who that's what they do, or that's what when they get out of school or seminary, that's what they aspire to do.
Right.
Well, I know this is not the topic of the day, but since you're giving us your background, what would you say to somebody who, man, that's what they want to do? They want to be a vocational church planter.
I would say make sure your wife wants to do it,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that you are taking care of your kids and your family while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because moving every couple years is a difficult thing on the family.
Yeah, that can really bring a wear and tear, perhaps not like other things. Man, I'm glad you spoke into that, and we weren't even planning to. Now, back to your story, where you're from.
So my dad landed in Pennsylvania, and I graduated from high school there, and he was going to go back to Philadelphia, or back to Michigan to take a church. I stayed in Philadelphia, went to Bible college there, and became a youth pastor at a church there. And my goal, I think just because I grew up in church planting, was to go to New Jersey and plant a church. That was my goal.
Yeah.
And Lord gave me a great burden for soul winning there in Philadelphia, and had a mentor there training me. But then I get a phone call from Bill Dutry out in at Midwest here in Cincinnati. And he said, I'm looking for a guy. I want to know if you're interested.
Okay, how old are you at the time?
I am 26 or 27.
Okay, so you're 26, 27.
Right.
You think your future is going this direction.
Right.
I'm supposed to be a church planter. And then Bill Dutry calls and says, I want to talk with you.
I want to talk with you. And so we go out, and it's nothing like I've ever grown up in, nothing like the church I was currently at.
Really?
I knew church planting, and the church we're at in Philadelphia was a growing church, but reaching first-generation Christians. And then the church that I'm interviewing at is 1,000 people.
A thousand.
Established.
Oh, wow.
3-4 generations deep into the church.
Oh, my goodness.
80 employees ministry-wide.
Okay, so again, 80. So this is a very large ministry.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
More employees than a lot of the churches my dad planted.
You know? Wow, yeah, no kidding.
So it was a huge task. We prayed. I believe the Lord brought me to that place. But it was so new to me.
Okay.
Going from just a small inner city growing church to just a well-established church that already had staff. Then I come to the place, and I'm the youngest guy on staff, and I'm supposed to be the administrative pastor and leading the staff.
And there's some obvious potential problems with
that.
What are the potential? Yeah, 80 staff, you're 27 years old. Mm-hmm. What is that like?
Very intimidating.
Yeah.
I just had to really find out who I was.
Okay.
Find out what worked for me,
yeah.
and really develop just a sense of how I'm going to be successful in the ministry.
Yeah, okay.
Because everything was different. Everything was new. And now people are looking to you for leadership and advice, and it was difficult. That was very difficult. That transition was probably a harder transition to going from an assistant pastor into pastoring for me.
And I could see why. I mean, now you're sitting across the table or at the desk, I'm supposing, with people that have been in ministry for decades, maybe in their 40s, 50s mm-hmm. even, and you're their administrative boss, and you're supposed to lead them and guide them.
Right.
Did you get kickback from that?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
I sure did. But I learned a lot in that. Is one is pride.
Okay.
My pride would say, kick back. Tell them you're in charge. Show them that you're in charge.
Okay.
And so I really had to learn humility.
Mm.
And that's a tough thing when you are in a place that large, growing ministry, a large staff, and you can develop pride very easily in that.
Mm.
And then you're not developing relationships with the staff. You're just wanting to be their boss or show them, hey, I'm 27, 28, but I can still tell you what to do.
Okay.
And I really had to work through that.
Yeah.
And work through that pride.
So it was really a lot of humility that God was trying to teach you. And instead of taking a position of authoritative leadership, you had to humble yourself.
Right.
I can't even imagine being in that situation, in the sense that these are people that are men of God, women of God, and now suddenly my boss is the 27-year-old new punk that came in, and you have to effectively lead.
Right.
So walk us through the process. As God is teaching you humility, practically, how do you begin to organize that group of individuals? Because according to what you just said, that transition to becoming the administrative assistant pastor there was more difficult than the transition from going to that church to being the senior lead pastor. So what was that like?
Well, for me, I needed to learn this, that in my position leadership, I'm there to help them be successful.
Okay.
Not them help me be successful.
Okay, say that again, because that is a key point, I think, with what you're trying to say.
As an administrative pastor, I needed to realize this, that I was there to help them be successful.
Okay.
My thought going in originally was, these people are going to work for me, and I'm going to get from the pastor what he wants, and then I'm going to tell them what they need to do, and they're going to work for me. And I had to realize this, that I was there to help them reach their potential, not them to help me become something. So they weren't working for me. I'm working for them.
Okay, that is fascinating to me, and I've never had this conversation with you, even though we've been friends. And I think it's very interesting, because we do have many that listen to this podcast who are in the position of administrative pastor. In fact, according to Tom Rainer, the number one growing position on church staff in the next 10 to 15 years, according to his projections, is the concept of administrative pastor. So there are a lot of people who are going to be feeding into what you're trying to say and learn from what you're saying. It is the perspective of administrative pastor. Okay, now these people, they work for me, and I'll fulfill the role of the vision of the pastor, the senior pastor. But you're saying it's the opposite.
Right.
It's I work for them to bring them up to their full potential.
Right.
Well, how do you do that? How do you work for the department heads or the pastors and bring them up to their full potential?
First is spending time with them, developing a real relationship with them.
Okay.
Not just an office relationship where we're sitting around a table and I'm giving you your assignment and you're reporting back to me, but really getting involved in their life. I don't think you can develop somebody and help them reach their potential and help them succeed in helping the pastor you're working for reach his potential in pastoring unless you really know them, unless just how you speak to them. Some people need someone to stay on top of them, and they need that pat on the back, they need that encouragement. Other people on staff, they don't need to be talked about in public or even that recognition.
They're more behind the scenes.
And they need to be there. And the only way you can find that without making big mistakes and hurting people is just spending one-on-one time with them, developing a good relationship.
So would you say one of the key points of being an administrative pastor is learning each staff member? Is that what you're saying?
It is. And being a friend.
Okay, being a friend, speak to that.
Listening to them?
Because that is so not corporate, right?
Yeah.
That's
not
corporate world. And we think administrative pastor, we think business, corporate world, but what you're saying is completely against what we would think.
Right. Again, it's we're here to help the staff reach their potential. And in them reaching their potential, the church people then get help, and the church reaches its potential. So there should be no insecurity. A staff should be able to be open and speak their mind and have ideas. Most people are intimidated doing it in front of their senior pastor. Mm. He can fire them. Mm. They're struggling. They don't want to go tell their boss that they're struggling because he's depending upon them to do their job so that he doesn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So as an administrative pastor, that go-between, someone should be able to come to you and say, I'm struggling in this area. I need help in this area. I'm stale. And you should be able to help them find the needs that they have and the resources they need and plug them in so they can just be refreshed. I dealt with so much on our staff that our pastor never dealt with and never knew. Mm. Now, we're not talking about sinful things.
Sure.
We're just talking about somebody that wants to be successful in the ministry that God's called them to and needs someone to help them reach that potential. Mm. I didn't want to. I think, I don't know if this goes along with our conversation, but I'll just break away here. Most people don't want to go to their pastor and say, I'm struggling and I need help.
Yeah.
So by having somebody there that's a friend, having somebody there that cares about them, having somebody there that isn't their authority as the pastor, but is there to help them, and they know he's there to help them reach potential, they can come to me with just about anything.
Man, that's beautiful, yeah.
And I never took that to the pastor and said, well, you know, we're so-and-so struggling. Mm. I would go to him and say, you know what I really think would help if we sent this person here, or we developed our budget to include these resources for our staff. It comes across him in a very positive way. And so he never looks out at the staff and thinks a negative about any of them.
I love that. I love the concept of the administrative pastor being a friend to the staff, a go-between between the staff and the pastor, so that not everything has to come before the pastor, but that he's able to genuinely friend them. And in a sense, you didn't use the word, but it seems almost pastoring them throughout their ministry, saying it's not about me, it's about advancing you as a minister to reach your full potential with the gospel in our local church. Man, I love that. And we weren't even planning on talking about that. So, you know what I think? And I know you agree with this, but I'll bet you there are people listening to this right now who needed that conversation. And we weren't even planning on going that direction. So, organizational leadership, though, when it comes to personal organizational leadership, you went from that growing, large, powerful, good church to then God comes to you at the age of
37,
and says, it's time for a change. Right. Tell us about that change.
Well, I was in Africa, and Lord put on my heart, it's time to pastor.
Wow.
So I came back and talked to Pastor Dutry. I believe if you're going to go pastor, your pastor needs to know about it, and pray with him about it, and let him help you in that area. Yeah. And we prayed about it for a period of time, and Lord opened up a door for me to pastor in the South.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So God makes it clear to you, okay, it's time to transition. You talk to your pastor, hey, will you pray with me about this? And then a door opens in the South. And the church with Pastor Dutry, for our audience's sake, what was the name of that church?
First Baptist Church of Milford, Ohio.
First Baptist Church of Milford, Ohio. Right. And then God led you down to the South. Tell us about that. First pastorate.
Right. My first pastorate. And totally different than being assistant pastor. But God used a lot of those things I learned as assistant pastor. Mm. And we implemented those things very quickly into the church. And because I learned a lot of organizational things, because I learned how to deal with the staff and how to allow staff to work without micromanaging them and just help them reach their potential and they could help the church, I then was able to spend time studying and counseling, the things I didn't have to do as an assistant pastor.
What was the structure of the church when you arrived in the South? Were there staff members? Was it a larger church, a smaller church? What was it like?
Well, the church was about 250, 275 people when I went there. There was a Christian school. So ministry-wide, there's about 22 employees. Mm-hmm. That was Christian school secretaries, and we did have a staff at the church. We immediately saw within the first year, we grew about 150 or so the first year.
Wow.
And the Lord allowed me to be there for 2.5 years, and then that 2.5 years, we pretty much doubled in size.
See, that's incredible. If you didn't catch that, you're listening. They doubled in size in 2.5 years, and God had you in the South. What an amazing thing. Now, what I find fascinating is so many times that we transition out of a ministry, because it's not going so well.
Right.
And here, you are in the midst of seeing great growth. You're leading your staff. God is growing you personally. You're 40 years old, and it's like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And then suddenly, God comes in with another transition.
Yes.
And tell us about that.
Well, I'm in Africa again, so I'm going to stop going to Africa.
Yeah, you need to stay away from Africa, I think.
And the Lord just puts it upon my heart, and I knew, I believe this, I took the church there as far as I could take it.
Mm.
The reality is some of the things I was trying to implement in who I was,
mm-hmm.
It helped the church get to a certain point,
mm-hmm.
but it took the church as far as I could.
Mm.
I think if I would have done more and try to implement more, then it probably would have hurt the church.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible, self-awareness, I don't know, for lack of a better term, to be able to know that the ministry I'm in, I've been able to do everything I can for this ministry, and now God has to be able to use somebody else to take it further. And that takes, I think, self-awareness, but also a little bit of humility to be able to say, that's it.
Right.
And what was that transition out? Was that difficult for you, your family, the church, and then to a new place?
It was very difficult. One is because of the short amount of time.
Mm.
It was difficult for my family. Mm. It was difficult for the church because we had success.
Yes.
It was difficult for me because we had success.
Yeah.
My family loved it. The church loved us. There was zero problems.
Mm.
And it's hard to make a move in ministry when there's no problems.
Yeah.
You're looking for problems. You're saying, Lord,
that's a great way to
just
say it.
Make a problem so I know this is your will.
Yeah.
And there wasn't. But my personality, my drive, we run 100 miles an hour.
Mm.
And my wife is used to that. And my kids are used to that. And so if I would have stayed there longer, either I would have to change or the church would have to change.
Mm. Yeah.
And I don't think neither needed to.
Yeah.
So the Lord opens up a ministry opportunity back up in Ohio for me, a larger ministry with a lot of opportunity where I can jump right in and run.
Mm.
And it needed the organizational things.
Mm-hmm.
It
which is what you have.
Mm-hmm. The Lord showed me this when I was in Milford. He gave me my opportunity for ministry in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Just get my feet wet. Gave me opportunity for administrative in a large church in the Midwest. And the pastoring opportunity in the South. Hmm. When he put me in Monclova, it was all of those things together.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he put me right where all of the things he was working in my life for all of my life.
Yeah.
He put me in this perfect fit where I can be me, the church wants and needs to go farther and faster.
Yeah.
And the church isn't changing, and I'm not changing.
Yeah.
We're just growing together.
I love it. Okay, so there's got to be many in our audience that are going to be thinking this. I'm stuck. This is it. This is where I'm at. Why does God have me in this situation? And it's so easy for us to identify in the story of someone else how in their life, God put you in this situation, allowed you to go through this and these other ministries to prepare you for this. And what a joy to know that maybe that's exactly what God is doing for you. That God is doing all of this right now and where you're at to prepare you for the perfect place that God wants you to be. What would you say to a person that might feel that frustration where they're at right now?
Ministry is not a marriage. I'm committed to one woman all of my life.
Yeah.
From the day I got married.
Yeah.
Me leaving her would be wrong.
Yes.
God isn't using her to prepare me for someone better.
Mm.
But in ministry, it's not the same as marriage. And I think a lot of guys get that guilt there.
Mm.
Well, if I look, then I'm not faithful to the people I'm pastoring.
Yeah.
Or I'm not faithful to the pastor. Marriage and ministry are two different things.
Mm.
I'm faithful to my wife, and I'm faithful to God in ministry.
Mm.
And by being faithful to God in ministry, He may use different ministries to train you and equip you so that He can use you later on in life at a church that you could never be involved in unless you went through this other process.
I think that's beautifully said. I think that's so powerful, and I think that's going to be help to a lot of people. Okay, so you arrive in Monclave, and I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
I've preached in your church. Mm-hmm. I love your church. So you arrive there, and what were those dynamics? How long have you been there? And what's going on now, and what were the dynamics that you came into?
Okay, 8 months. I've been there 8 months. I come into a place where the previous pastor was there 23 years.
Wow.
Every 4 or 5 years, they were having a building program. He was a good preacher. He was a good pastor. He was leading by faith. Nothing negative could be said about this man.
Yeah.
He got sick. He got leukemia. And just health-wise, he could not continue.
Yeah.
And so I step into a church where the man was just brilliant.
Mm.
And I realized this. The Lord used all of those things in my life to bring me to this spot.
Mm.
There are 55 full and part-time employees, Christian school, a church. I'm just hired a. I'll be hiring two new positions: a youth pastor and a children's pastor.
Oh, how exciting!
They're coming on at the end of this month.
Very cool.
We'll have 8 men on our pastoral staff, and then we, you know, have a ministry with secretaries and school teachers and the whole support staff.
Okay, now this gets to the crux of what we really want to discuss.
Right.
God has prepared you for this ministry, but now you have a heavy burden of personal organization,
right,
and ministry organization. Before we can ever deal with how Jeremy Ranz deals with organizational leadership over a large ministry, we have to talk about Jeremy Ranz dealing with his own worst enemy, and that is Jeremy Ranz.
Right.
How do you get Jeremy Ranz to do everything he's supposed to do? How do you get everything done personally?
Okay.
Let's talk about that.
Well, you would think, you know, spend more time awake and work more hours. Really, it's the opposite for me.
Okay.
I function better when I rest.
Hmm.
When I am well rested, I think better.
Hmm.
When I am well rested, I deal with people better. When I'm well rested, I'm a better father, better husband.
Hmm.
And so through this whole process of the last 40 years and almost 20 years of ministry, I have come to the place where I realize making sure that I'm taking care of myself, spiritually, physically, emotionally, I can take care of more people.
Mm.
My family, my wife, a church, a growing staff. So many times, and my dad died of a heart attack when he was 55.
Oh, my Lord.
He was just 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
The reality is I never saw him rest. Mm. He never took a day off. And so going into this, I realized I want to live past 55.
Mm.
I want to see God do a great work in my family, in a church, and I want to be there when he's blessing.
Mm.
And I need to make sure that I'm resting.
Yeah.
So it's really, I guess it's ironic to say this, but I wanted to make sure that throughout the week, I was at my best so I could help people be at their best.
Mm.
I grew up in the ministry. I saw a lot of preacher's kids feel like they weren't loved and wanted. They knew it, but they didn't feel it.
Yes.
And I've got 5 kids. I don't want that for my family.
Yeah.
So I just kind of began to think things differently.
Yeah.
And it's not a selfish, I'm going to just be lazy and lay on the couch.
Yeah.
It's I'm going to make sure I get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
I'm going to make sure that my wife gets the best of my time.
Yeah.
And I don't counsel. I don't. I'm not one of those that every 30 minutes I have an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I want to rest even between appointments and clear my mind so the person coming in next
has fresh pastor.
My full attention.
That's a fascinating idea. And for the idea talks, that practical idea right there is huge. You meet with an individual. You give yourself a few moments to just clear your mind, and then the pastor is fresh for the next meeting. That's something I can take away right now. That's something I can use.
The reality is I don't take more than 3 appointments in a day.
Yeah.
I know me. Now, somebody might take 6, just how they're built. For me, I know that with everything else I'm doing that day, if I try to put 3 other major things in my day,
it's not gonna happen.
I'm not going to give that 4th person the time they need.
That's great. I love that. So it's knowing yourself, and you begin with this concept of organizational leadership begins with the idea of personal rest, making sure that you are resting, you are rested up so that you can be the best that you possibly can be. We and our staff, we have kind of a core staff principle that we talk about, one of them being you have to enjoy your work. And it's impossible to enjoy your work if you are dead tired and exhausted constantly. And so the idea of your time off, your evenings off, if you have that possible, and working out to where you have time with your family. I, by the way, have to say about what you said about your family, I have to parrot that, because if I didn't parrot that, my dad would be upset. He wants to hear this said, and that is, spend time with your kids. Yeah. Love your kids. And I've been with your family. I'm not just seen from the outside. I'm your friend. I've been with your beautiful family. And they love spending time with their dad. And I remember sitting around that Red Robin and your kids jumping all over. And I remember thinking, I wish my kids were here jumping around all over too. But what you say is what you live. And that's what I love about that. So you would say first key is, look, don't feel guilty about taking rest.
Right.
Because if you're not taking that rest, you're not going to be organized and working to your best potential. What else?
Rest is wisdom. Being a sluggard is foolish.
That is, that's tweetable right there, okay? Rest is wisdom. Being a sluggard is foolish.
So I want to make sure that I'm there for my wife. I want to make sure I'm there for my kids. I want to make sure that I'm there for my staff and our church. Mm. So I just go through my week, and again, I know who I am. Mm. I don't try to be like any other pastor.
Yep.
I don't try to model myself after another man. I take a lot of things from other men, but I try to just be what God made me and be comfortable with that,
yeah.
Realizing there are other pastors that do more than me, and I'm okay with
that. And you have to be okay with that.
I'm fine.
Yeah, that's good.
And so I think it's key to be sure you know who you are,
yeah.
And you're okay being who you are. Even if somebody else is doing more, don't let it intimidate you.
Yeah.
Just be yourself.
I love it.
As a pastor. And then, so I just go from there, and I want to make sure I'm there for my wife. Mm. My wife said something probably 15 years ago to me. She said, you're there for everyone else.
Mm.
Your phone rings at the dinner table, you answer it. I call you during the middle of the day, and you don't answer
Ugh.
It.
Ugh.
And that was like a dagger to
yeah.
me. And I say to her, I love you more, and my actions didn't show I love you more.
Yeah.
So I date my wife every single week.
Yeah.
We have a day, Thursday lunch is hers.
Yeah.
It's nobody else's.
Hmm.
Thursday is the day off that I take, then the entire day is for my wife.
Hmm.
We do what she wants to do.
Yeah.
I can't tell others and show others how to have a successful marriage if I'm not living it.
Yeah.
I can tell it and fake it in front of them, but they'll see it in my wife.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so what I've loved so far is we've said, let's talk about organizational leadership. We didn't jump to an app.
Right.
We didn't jump to the latest book. We began with rest, mm-hmm. which to me is extremely biblical, back to the time of Genesis.
Right.
Then you went to your wife,
right.
time with your spouse, as if having the rest you need and having the relationship you need is leading to a place where you can have organization
right.
at the level that you want it to be.
I'm having the time of my life in the ministry.
Yeah.
And so is my wife.
Awesome.
We're doing it together.
That's cool.
And if you don't start there, you can be organized, you can have a schedule, but it's all going to fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. So where do we go from there? As I begin to alliterate, because you said rest
right.
and then relationship with your wife, where would you go from there? Personal organization.
Personal organization. I want to, every Sunday afternoon, I look at what my week is.
Okay.
No week is ever the same. I don't get into a rut where this is what I do on this day and now I'm set. I make my schedule.
Okay.
A lot of people let the church, let circumstances, let problems make their schedule
yeah.
and they're always running and they never feel like they get everything accomplished.
Yeah.
I set my week out to accomplish something.
So you schedule a weekly time to look at the next seven
Correct.
Days. And that for you, that's Sunday afternoon. Right. Why Sunday afternoon?
Sunday afternoon just because my kids are resting and my wife's probably normally taking a nap.
Yep.
And it's fresh in my mind what's coming up.
Okay.
For me, it just works because I haven't started my week yet.
Yeah.
But I'm right on the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And so I can see 5, 6, 7 days ahead.
It may have been talking to you or it may have been talking to another pastor, but I picked up on this habit just probably 2 years ago. And I began to schedule, the first thing of the week was to schedule my week.
Hmm.
And I do it personally Monday morning, first thing, after my time with God. I do it probably about, I probably get to it right about 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I look, that's what I do. It takes me about 30 to 45 minutes. And I just look at all the appointments coming up. I
right.
schedule it out. When am I going to study? When am I going to prepare Sunday night? When am I going to spend time with the family? When am I going to do all of this? Make sure Jonathan's baseball games are in there.
Right.
And that has been, and for those who have not done this yet, if I had listened to this 3 years ago, I would have not known this.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who have not learned what you're saying and what I've just learned, there is a peace that comes over me the moment all of my to-dos are in my little to-do app and I've got the whole week scheduled.
Right.
I'm not racking my brain. Okay, what's this week got? It's all there.
Right.
I'm done. I can sit back and I can focus, and every couple hours or whatever it is, every hour, it'll come up with what's next.
Right.
Do you experience that peace as well?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Because I know now what I'm going to do
yeah.
and who I'm going to invest in
mm-hmm.
and how I'm going to invest in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I know if I'm preaching in a sermon series, this specific sermon coming up, it needs more time.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just say, you know, I spend 3 hours a week no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this message coming up, I might need five. I might need six.
Yep.
I might need more. My wife might need more of me this week because of something we're going through.
Yep.
It helps me set up. I know where our staff are. I'm going to invest more in this staff member this week because either they need this, they've got something personal they're dealing with, there's some big ministry
mm-hmm.
Event coming up. And by me setting my calendar and not letting my calendar set me, mm-hmm. I get more accomplished,
yeah.
and I feel more peaceful when I do it.
But somebody's going to come and say, okay, Josh, Jeremy, that's fine, but in my ministry, life happens.
Okay.
And then suddenly somebody's going to walk in my office, and they're going to say, what about this and what about that? Mm-hmm. What do you say? How do you control that? What do you do?
Okay. If it's a emergency, I get to decide if it's an emergency
okay.
when it's my schedule.
Yeah. Say that again.
I get to decide if it's an emergency when it deals with my schedule.
Okay.
Everybody's needs is an emergency to them.
Sure.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I have a staff is they're to help me.
Mm.
We don't have a silo ministry where I'm pastoring and our staff are all doing what they're doing and we don't know
yeah.
what each other's doing. I hire the staff to my weakness so they're strong in certain areas.
Mm.
So just because it's somebody else's emergency doesn't mean it becomes an emergency to me.
Mm-hmm.
I can't drop everything.
Yeah.
And I know somebody's out there thinking, you're a pastor, you're not going to drop something.
Mm-hmm.
If I condition them that every time there's an emergency in their mind that I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing, then all I'm going to be doing is in emergency mode all the time.
Man, that is so powerful and so incredibly important. If somebody had told me that the first 5 years of our church, I swear it would have caused me saved me from a lot of problems. And let's see if I can paraphrase again. I can't paraphrase. Say it again. say what you were saying, because it really is something I think that has to be learned. And somebody could learn it from
sure.
this podcast.
If you're going to condition your church that every time they have an emergency, they can have access to you, and you're going to drop everything,
yeah.
then all you're going to be doing is going from emergency to emergency. And your
yes.
church is going to become, and your life is going to become an emergency.
Yes.
And your adrenaline's always going to be running high.
Yes.
And you're not going to be accomplishing the things that you need to. You're going to be accomplishing the things that they want you to accomplish.
Yes. Wow. So what do you do?
Well, one thing that I always do, people still need to get their needs met.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately for me, I've got a staff that I can push people
mm-hmm.
to. And I let our people know this, just because you're dealing with an assistant pastor, you're not getting anything less.
Mm.
You're going
yes.
to get the answer. They're going to use the word of God. They're going to get, you're going to get the advice you need. These are spiritual men, and they're there to help me pastor you. And so our pastors, this helps them reach their potential. It allows me a relationship with an assistant pastor so that they can come in when I'm spending time with them and say, I'm dealing with this issue. How can I grow? If they never have an opportunity to deal with problems or deal with these emergencies, and I'm dealing with them all,
yes,
I don't have time with them.
Yep.
So they're not growing. They're sitting in their offices wondering, how can I help? Feeling stale, feeling like they're not growing.
That's a great point, yeah.
So by giving them, now I know what this emergency is, I know what our staff, they're capable of doing, so I can place this person with this staff member and they get their help. And they leave feeling there are others that can help me in speaking to my life.
You know, I want to speak to the one who might be listening and say, man, that'd be fantastic to have a great staff like Jeremy or Josh has, but I would say this concept can be used in the same way with your deacons, the way
yes.
the Bible
yes.
originally set up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a pastor, he's got two or three guys maybe that he really relies upon, and we even do this at Southern Hills, where there's a counseling session,
yeah.
I can call a deacon, and I can say, hey, this person needs to meet with you. And that what that does is that raises the level of the leadership of
right.
the deacon to a
right.
point where they actually are doing the work of the ministry.
Right.
So you think it'd be possible for somebody to take if he has 70 people in his church and a deacon or two, to give him that kind of responsibility?
Yes, I definitely believe that, yeah.
Okay, so personal response or personal organization. We're talking about making time for rest. We're taking relationship with your wife, making sure that's a priority. And then you're talking about a specific time of the week where you you make your schedule mm-hmm. instead of allowing your schedule Correct. To make you.
Right.
What else would you say? Give us one more tip and then we'll move on to organizational.
I guess in far as that is keeping it.
Keeping it. Go ahead, speak to it.
Do what you plan to do.
Okay.
When I set out to my week, there's goals. And by keeping to that schedule, I meet my goals. Mm. My goals are always people-oriented, not just things. Mm. It's always to help somebody get better. My relationship with my wife, the time together is to help our marriage grow. My mm. time with our staff is to help our staff grow. My time with church members on purpose is to help them grow.
Yes.
So it's not just to stay busy. And there's a difference between having a busy schedule and having a productive schedule.
Okay. I keep saying this to you, but you say a great thing. Say that one more time.
The key is to have not have a busy schedule, yes. but a productive schedule.
A productive schedule. Right. And the difference between the two are?
Well, you can spin in circles and yeah. get nothing accomplished and be busy.
Yeah.
Or you can on purpose set out goals and stick to a schedule, stick to those times, stick to those goals. And at the end of your week, you look back and everything you wanted to accomplish was accomplished. And now you can reschedule your following week.
So it is cyclical, really. It's saying, okay, my rest is where it needs to be. My relationships are where they need to be. Then I set my schedule every week and then I do right. my schedule every week. I mean, it seems simple. Why is it so hard for us to do that which is simple?
Number one, I think, is pride.
Okay.
Because we don't like to say no to anybody.
Okay, yes.
Number two, it's selfishness. Mm-hmm. Because if something comes up that interests me, I like to maneuver instead of just sticking to meeting others' needs. And the third thing is it is human nature. Mm. And yeah. we're all human.
Yeah. So a little bit of discipline that says, look, I'm not going to be prideful. I'm going to be focused. And I'm really going to care about the needs of others. In doing so, it allows that personal organization to raise to the next level. Now, we've talked a lot about philosophy. Just quickly, methodologically, maybe there's one or two practical books or maybe a practical app or maybe something that you're like, okay, or some kind of a planner. You say, okay, once you understand the philosophy, here's a few things that you can take away right now. What would you say?
I use Yahoo Calendar. We use that within our church, and so my calendar, my email is all there, and it's web-based, so I can do anything.
You can go anywhere and right. do everything. Okay.
Right. Yep. So I can work, add to my calendar. My secretary at the church sees it from Cincinnati, and she's up in Toledo.
Perfect.
So I think you have to – it's important to have a web-based software if you can afford it, and if your church can – most of them are free anyways. Mm-hmm. So maybe even not if you can afford it, but if you'll discipline yourself to learn how to use it. Mm-hmm. I do use a planner as well, just so I can get a visual and I can flip month to month.
Yep.
I don't put every single appointment in there, but I put the big things in there so that as I'm looking month to month, I can add to my calendar events to prepare for those big
yes.
events on
okay.
the calendar.
That makes sense.
And so I think you need some kind of web-based program for your calendar and your email. If the two can go together,
perfect.
It's a good fit. Then a calendar. I think you should always be looking out, especially in a church, a year, 2 years, even 3 years, if your church is large. Mm-hmm. You can't wait to spring something on your people.
Yeah.
We just implemented this in our church. We're letting our church know 3 years out mission trips so they can begin to plan. I want our staff to know 3 years out, big events. We let our church know. I'm not one to plan something next month. Hey, I got a great idea, church, let's do it.
Yeah.
If I got a great idea, it's probably going to go next year.
Yes. Yeah. Now, see, this is speaking to me because I think we're in that stage where we're ready. We're ready to begin planning not just the annual calendar and not just major things like a church plant or something, but things like missionary trips, things
right.
like trips to Israel, things that would really take several years for people to get their mind around.
Right.
And I think that's a fantastic thing. Well, man, what you've brought, I think, has really helped me. I think it's helped our audience. I am appreciative of this. And I know that our audience is as well. Now, if they'd like to get in contact with you via social media, online, how can they find you? Maybe on Twitter, something else?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Jeremy Rands.
Okay.
on Facebook. I don't know my Facebook. You just have to put it.
It's Jeremy Rantz.
If they go to you,
yeah.
And they can find me as
they can
your
find
friend.
Me. That's right.
Yeah. And our church website, MontclovaBaptist.org. I believe you can find my Twitter account in there as well.
Fantastic. And is it possible to say, I didn't ask you before, but I'm going to throw it out there. Is it possible to say if somebody that listens to this or watches this has a question, a follow-up, they can contact you personally?
Sure. Okay. As long as they don't get upset if I give them to one of my staff.
There you go. That's organized leadership right there. Thank you so much for watching this episode of the Idea Talks. We're excited about Idea Day Midwest. And in fact, it takes place tomorrow. Now, you're going to be watching this months after it happened. But I've got to tell you, maybe you think, man, I wish I could have come. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be fun. It looks like a great environment. It really is. You've got to come to one of our Idea Days and have the opportunity of discussing topics like this. The ones that are coming up is Idea Day South in November. You can register at ideaday.cc or Idea Day West, the original in Las Vegas, which is one you've been to.
Yes.
In Las Vegas, and that's coming up in January. And we're looking forward to that as well. So until the next Idea Talks, thanks for watching.